I chose a book today that some of you may have heard of. It's called Knowing God by J.I. Packer. Who's heard of this book? Anybody? A few of you? It's been around a long time. Several editions. If you notice, the last 3 weeks now that we have talked, I have suggested a book. It's been on the attributes of God or the characteristics of God. One of the things that happens to us, whether we're a new believer or an old believer, is we begin to lose our idea of how grand God is, how big God is, how good He is. And sometimes we need to review that and think through that in experience, but also in a intellectual manner. And so a book can do that. This is another one of those books with nice short chapters. So you can read a 10-page or an 8-page chapter on a characteristic or an attribute of God, and it can help you to develop that. Some of the topics in here are what is a person who knows God look like? Knowing and being known, the only true God, His majesty, His wisdom, His truth, His love, His grace, His judgment. There's just lots of... Remember what we said a few weeks ago? We said if you focus on just one attribute or one doctrine of God, you can lose your balance and be caught up in unhealthy cults, I guess you could say. That's how most of these start, focusing on just one attribute solely rather than the entire set of attributes about God. Many people have thought well on these topics, and this is a book that can help you to exercise the limits of your knowledge in that area. Okay, we are in Matthew, and we have been starting in chapter 7. If you remember from last week, I added just a little bit on there. It's weird for me to look out and see this Red Sea thing down the middle. You know, there's no one there. I didn't know if we had a great schism during the week and all the... But see, I get confused because... To me, you are the right wingers, but to you, you are the left wingers, and you are the left, but you're the right, and I don't know where your identity rests, so I don't know. And I gotta say, Roger came in. Roger, raise your hand back there. Roger wanted me to point out that he went to Moody, and that was last week's book. Remember last week's guide? He went there, and he says, "How come you didn't point out Moody?" And I said, "So, everybody give Roger a hand." I'm just picking on him. And then Margie said, "What about mothers? How about grandmothers?" Especially when you get to raise your kids and your grandkids and everything else. So grandmothers get, maybe that's the meaning of the second blessing. You know, maybe they have that wrong, that your grandmothers get the second blessing. You don't even know what I'm talking about, so that's okay. We're moving toward the, yes. Yeah, grandchildren are fun because you can give them back at the end of the day. We're moving toward the end of the Sermon on the Mount. We've been up there for a while, right? And He's been teaching concept after concept, precept after precept. And He's teaching, remember, we identified the Jewish Israelite population as nearly the same kind of people as we are. They were religious people. They'd been in religion their whole lives. They were quite proud of it to the detriment of those around them. And although they'd been waiting for the Messiah for many hundreds of years, they're going to miss it, or most of them are. And that should be a lesson to us because we have been around religion our whole lives, and we can miss the heart of God really easily by being simply religious rather than trying to think carefully about what the kingdom of heaven is, what being a Jesus follower would really look like. So let's look just for a minute at what we finished last week, and that was verses 1 through 5. We're going to read that. "Judge not that ye be not judged, for with the judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me remove the speck from your own eye,' and look, a plank is in your own eye, from your eye. Look, a plank is in your own eye. Hypocrite, First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Now, if you remember what we said last week when we were moving through that, we said it doesn't say not to judge. It says don't judge by a judgment that you would not to be, would like to be judged by. We obviously have to judge. We cannot do anything without judgment. We can't make any decision. We can't run a business. We can't. Do any of you use judgment with your spouse? Just a question. Has your judgment ever been wrong with your spouse? This is another question. Yeah. See, we have to judge, but if we're humble about our judging potential, we know that we're going to mess up. We know that there's great danger that lays there. So he is actually, in this series of verses, going to prepare us to judge rightfully with right discernment, as opposed to saying that we can't judge. Remember that we said that the speck was not a speck, but the interpretation of the word is a large wood chip or a stick. And when you have that in your eye, it's quite painful. Ed asked me specifically to pick on him a lot today, so I will do that at his request.
I don't remember that.
Well, it was in the original, okay? Now, if Ed has a wood chip in his eye, and I see that, it doesn't mean it doesn't need to be removed. It does need to be removed, because the slightest particle in your eye, you are completely incapacitated. You cannot do anything. You guys know that feeling? You get something in your eye, you just shut down. You don't care if the world comes to an end until you get that thing out of there. So it needs to be removed, but care has to be taken, because I've got things in my eye as well. And if I'm just worried about Ed's eye, and I'm doing it harshly and critically, then I deserve a greater judgment than him for my harsh and critical judgment of his particular wood chip, and especially if mine is greater. So what does it say at the end there? It says, hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So the goal is not to not be able to judge at all, but the goal is to be able to have sufficient discernment with your own eye that you can help somebody else in a proper and gracious manner. So it has to be removed. It has to be done in a careful way. We've studied the eye a little bit in Matthew. We've seen it several times. Remember, the eye is the is what fills us with light. And we were talking about the discernment that we have. When we have that discernment correctly, it'll fill us with truth. And when it's incorrect, it'll fill us with falseness, and the darkness will be great. So the kingdom of heaven, which is what he's talking about the whole time, will be filled with spiritually discerning people and spiritually humble people. And that's what should mark us, the idea of spiritual discernment. Now, if you have the spiritual discernment toward yourself, you are automatically going to be spiritually humble toward others. Because spiritual discernment toward yourself will show you the faults that you still have, even after you're saved, the difficulties that still rest within you, but you will be able to still speak out. It won't make you silent. You'll still be able to speak out, but you will speak out with a graciousness that isn't necessarily common in this world. Religious people tend, when they find a fault in others, they tend to capitalize on it in a big way, and they tend to go after them, put them in a box, and be harsh on them. I'm sorry. But in the kingdom of heaven, that's not what it's going to look like. Let's look for a minute now at this next verse that's coming up. It says, do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. Now, that is a very interesting verse. Taken by itself, it doesn't seem to mean very much. In this particular translation, it is kind of stands alone there in a paragraph. If you have your Bible with you, you'll find that it's really usually attached to the end of chapter 6 and belongs to that paragraph. So it says, do not give what is holy to the dogs. Now, when you use terms like dogs or swine with the nation of Israel, they understand immediately what you're talking about. They're talking about unclean things. They're talking about vile things. We know that we've studied that the nation of Israel had a good understanding of unclean things. They were big on cleansing rituals. They were big and they developed that into a fine art. We saw it earlier in this book. We see it in Genesis, and then they expanded on it in the Talmud and the other books that they had created. So that's in their thoughts immediately what he is trying to say to them. But it is impossible to understand it without understanding the first verses. So if you have learned to be able to be humble and careful with your judgment of others, you have as much as possible removed the plank of harsh judgment from your own eye, and you have a spirit of helpfulness toward your brother who has a difficulty that you think you need to help with, you are going to take the chance of helping them. Have any of you ever tried to take a chance to help a brother or a sister who's struggling with a difficulty? Raise your hand if you've ever tried to help a brother and sister. Raise your hand if at any time it has not gone well. Okay. See, the idea isn't that once we have humbled ourselves and once we have learned to remove our own difficulty, that it's always going to be well accepted. You know, received. It's not going to be well received sometimes. Sometimes it's going to be viewed as harsh and critical. And what right do you have to say these things to me? And you can say, really, you know, I don't have a right to say these things. Except for God has done a work in my life that has really helped me. And I was just offering to you a little bit of what he's done for me to see if it might help you. Because we don't get to stand in a position of total authority and judge other people. We have a responsibility. Once we stick our neck out there and try to help, to take what comes back to us in a gracious manner. Do you guys listen to Christian radio or watch Christian TV? I don't watch Christian TV. By the term, I don't mean the TV's a Christian. I mean, you know, that stuff that comes in. There is a program for everybody. No matter what if you want to be rude and mean, there's a program out there that says it's okay to be rude and mean. You know, it's amazing to me the variety that are out there. And they're diametrically opposed to each other, so they can't be all true. And I don't think we're all entitled to our own personal truth. So I think, back to our verse, you err because you know not the Scriptures. They don't know the Scriptures well. And so the decisions that they're making, the things that they're teaching on, become harsh. And we talked about that before with the picketing of military funerals and stuff by churches. You know, how rude that seems, how judgmental that seems. And I think that sometimes those congregations, in an effort to try to make a good statement, have exalted their own personal behavioral choices as much superior to the other group. And I think that's the earmark of religion in our day is exalting our own practices. So, but we're still called to take this chance. And we're still called to go out and help somebody. So if the blank has been removed from your own eye and you're going to help somebody, you're going to take that chance. When it says give what is holy to the dogs, the word holy means set apart or separate or morally clean. So we have to know that when we do that, it's going to be something that is totally alien to those people. If you take your pearls, now pearls were the most valuable jewel of the day. If you take your pearls to a, anybody wearing pearls today? If you take your pearls to a swine pen, a pig pen, and you throw them in the pig pen, what is the pig's first response? He's going to hope it's food, right? He's going to go over there and he's going to root around in there and see if they're edible. If they're edible, he will be happy with you. If they're not edible, what will he do? He will leave them there and trample them into the mud. They will be of no value to him whatsoever, or her. Dogs are the same way. If you go to a dog and you offer them pearls or something of value, like a pearl, they're not going to value it. They're not going to put them on a chain and wear them around their neck, or a string and wear them around their neck. It's of no value. And here's the risk that we have when we go to teach spiritual truth to people who we think need it. If a pearl was the most valuable possession that a person could have in those days, what is your most valuable possession? My most valuable possession is my knowledge of God. That is my most valuable possession. I know I have nothing else that I would ever consider trading for that knowledge, as minute as it might be. My knowledge of God is the most important thing to me. And that's what he's talking about here. He's not talking about your pearls, but he's saying when you take the most important thing to you, which is your knowledge of God, your understanding of who God is, the Bible says the beginning, or the knowledge, the fear of God, the knowledge of God is the beginning of wisdom. It's the most important foundational thing that we have. When we offer that to somebody else, are they going to appreciate it? Think about your workplace. Or when you were in school. I worked at a grocery store when I was in Bible school, and some of the guys knew it. Most of them were very nice to me. One guy called me Jesus all the time. Hey, Jesus, how's it going? So I just said, pretty good, devil, how you doing? No, I didn't say that. I'm just kidding. That was not in my notes either. I want you to know that. But you know, I didn't say swine or dog, but he mocked the very thing that was most important to me. You see, Jesus is preparing his disciples here, his followers, and he's saying the kingdom of heaven is going to look a little different than you think. The children of Israel, we've talked about this several times, but I got to go over it again. They wanted health, wealth, and power, right? They wanted stuff. They wanted the kingdom. They wanted the whole physical package. And Jesus is saying the kingdom of heaven is not the physical package. The kingdom of heaven is what's going on inside of you, the change that is coming over you as you become my disciples. The children of Israel wanted health, wealth, and power so badly that they became the swine that are mentioned in this verse, because they turned and trampled Jesus, right? Because he didn't give them what they wanted. What happens to our faith in God when we don't get what we want? I have to check the time here, sorry. What happens to our faith in God when we don't get what we want? People start checking out on their faith, right? They start saying, this doesn't work for me. I want this other set of values. I want this other set of things. Which category would we put ourselves in here when we start to look at this? The rich young ruler came to Jesus. What did he want? What was his most valuable possession? It was money, right? Or some sort of wealth. Did Jesus say to him, let's form a discipleship program where in 3 years you may feel differently about this topic? As far as we know, they never met again or shared again. That was just it. I'm not advocating that you have that sort of arrogance. You don't have the wisdom to have that. Jesus sort of had a little more wisdom than us, and a little more knowledge of what the end result would be with this guy. But you cannot continue to pour out your most treasured possessions foolishly to people who don't want it. But see, if you have the kind of discernment that you've developed in this first paragraph, you know more of when to speak and when to stop. And you know when to say something gentle or maybe a little more harshly, or when to not say anything at all. And we know that some people just won't accept it. They won't receive it. Other people have a tender heart for it. And you have that sort of discernment. There are people who I've approached and said, would you like to do something maybe in a discipleship way? You know, where we kind of talk about spiritual things like once a week for a while or something. And most of them that I have approached that way have said, yes, I would like to do that. But there are people who I would not say that to. I'm not picking and choosing who I like necessarily, but I know that they wouldn't necessarily receive it. They have no interest in spiritual things. That's not the first thing that's going to have to happen to them. So see, this whole 6-7 verses here, the idea is developing spiritual discernment and how to reach out. And you know, the disciples are going to have spiritual discernment. Jesus goes to certain villages, right? Do all the villages and towns accept him? And isn't there a warning for the disciples when he sends them out? Remember the knock the dust off your feet and that sort of thing, you know? You're not going to be received everywhere you have to share the message. It shouldn't crumble you. It shouldn't, I mean, it'll hurt a little bit, but it shouldn't destroy you, because you have developed discernment along the way, and through that discernment you've developed the humility. You care more about them than you care about your own personal worth. And so if they say no, or they push you aside, they make fun of you or mock you, that's okay. Don't think you'll be crucified for it yet. You might be made a little fun of, but that's okay. You can handle that. This is a difficult passage, because you are then using incredible judgment to decide who is receptive to Christian truth and who isn't. And that is a growth process for each of you to decide where you can scatter your seed best. We still scatter, don't we? Even when you know that it's probably not going to be received that well, you still scatter your seed. You get out there and you give it a shot. I think Ed's pretty, I'm still picking on Ed because he's knit back, but I've seen Ed scatter seed, people he don't even know. Just walk up to the counter and start throwing seed all over the place up there. And that's good, you know, because he's going to throw it. And if it gets a little bit of fertility going there and starts to grow, he's happy for that. And if it doesn't, he just moves on to the next counter. And that's our challenge. Our challenge is to do that. And then we move on to the next few verses. It's only natural that if you have tried to create yourself as a follower of Christ based on the first verses there, and you're trying to use your best discernment as to how you should use your gift and your knowledge, that you're going to call out to the Lord for help. Because I do not know how you could have sufficient wisdom on your own to deal with the difficulties of these decisions without the Spirit giving you direction. And so it's not surprising that the next few verses begin to talk about seeking God's wisdom in the area of making decisions. In verse 7 it says, ask and it will be given you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds. And to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you, then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. We'll spend a fair amount of time in this little, because there's a lot of interesting things. I like the part where he's talking to him and he said, so you then being evil. That's not a very nice thing to say to them. But apparently he thought it was appropriate for this particular application. But the first verse is, there's three levels to it. He says, ask, and then seek, and then knock. And we see that, we know that our first job is to ask him. We ask for the wisdom that we need in order to accomplish these tasks that are given to us above. The goal of reaching out to somebody, I think that the more that we prepare ourselves to reach out to somebody, the more effective that we'll be. By preparing, that means we're seeking what God would have us to share. Francis Schaeffer, who you guys know and I like, he says he never answers a question. I don't know if it's true, but he says he never answers a question, even in the question and answer period, without just before he answers a question, asking God to give him wisdom for that answer. That's a pretty mindfulness of God that many of us don't have. You know, we think we have enough wisdom within ourselves to just throw that answer out there. And there's a lot of answers you could give. They say that Jesus, of all the questions asked him in the New Testament, only answered directly a handful of them. He always took a different approach. He used a parable. He used a story. He asked them a question. There was always great wisdom and discernment in how he gave information back to the person who was seeking information from him. We tend to be more like soda fountain machines or something. They put in the quarter and out comes the answer, right? We don't put much thought into it. We just know the answer already. In fact, sometimes we know the answer so well, we don't let them finish the questions before we're answering them, right? You guys probably don't do that, but I could probably fall into that. So we have to ask, and then we have to seek, and then we have to take action. And the door will be opened. In that day, the culture, the deepest culture was Hebrew culture, Jewish culture. But the culture of trade and the culture of society was Greek culture. And then coming Roman culture. And what are the gods like in the Roman cultures and the Greek cultures? They're mean gods. They're cruel. They like to toy with humanity. You ask them for bread, and they might give you a stone just for fun. And if you've read any of the, you know, stories from back then, you'll see that kind of a God, that kind of amplified humanity actually is what it is. So what he's saying here is that God, the real God, is not like this. He does not do these things. He is compassionate. He gives you what you would give to your own child. He will give you the wisdom that you need to get through these difficult struggles. Often when we don't want to struggle with approaching somebody with truth or helping them remove a chip from their own eye, we say, I don't want to speak up. I want to be a silent witness. Has anybody heard that phrase, I want to be a silent witness? I have mixed emotions toward that. I mean, we shouldn't talk all the time. But you can know that God exists by looking at nature. But does it say you can know that Jesus exists by looking at nature? No, it doesn't say that. Somebody has got to tell you. I like silent natures, but I think I've had enough of silent nature, of silent witnesses in life. I think I need some more verbal ones. But they have to be spirit-led. If they're not spirit-led, then it's just going to be offensive, right? We're just going to turn and be more offensive than ever. And spirit-led is going to God and asking Him for the wisdom to carefully be able to relate the truth that we feel that should be applied to that person. So when we look at this, I urge you just this week to look down through that. And it's kind of a strange flow. It's not a flow that we as Western culture would put together to try to convince you to do the things that he's trying to get you to do for the kingdom of heaven. It's a much more Middle Eastern train of thought, train of logic, stories, pictures. And they did this when they thought something was really important. They told a story about it. They painted a picture. So he must have thought it was important enough to try to convince them in this area. Because remember, this is going to be their whole life from now on. As soon as they come down off this mountain, it's going to be time to start doing things. And they're going to start doing some incredibly challenging things, incredibly difficult things. And remember, they don't get it until after he's dead, right? They still don't get it that they're not going to get health, wealth, and power. And I don't know if we get it either. Because as soon as we get a little unhealthy or something goes wrong, we are angry with God. And so if we are going to bring the kingdom of heaven to the people who need it, which is our neighbors, our friends, we have to use this kind of discernment and we have to get it from God. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the day. We really need, in order to follow you as you have asked us to, we need to have discernment so that we have confidence that we are pursuing something that will bring glory to you rather than just mess up the picture even more. I am woefully unable to communicate this truth to the people in this room. And I would ask that through your Spirit, you take the words from your word and apply them into each person's life, that they might be more effective and more discerning in reaching out and sharing the most important thing that we have, which is truth about you, with the world and those we come in contact with. Thank you for your goodness to us and your kindness and your patience. Help us to be mindful of you in all we do. In Jesus' name, amen.